Hello, everybody. It's that time again, and of course, I'm talking about another lively episode of There Is No Off Season. It's Baseball Prospectus's only daily dynasty podcast, proud member of the BP Podcast Network. I'm Mark Berry. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and with me today, as he's been for the entire preseason series and will be for the foreseeable future, is Jesse Roche. Jesse, what's up, buddy?
Did you say miss?
What?
I'm just going to pretend I didn't hear miss. It's
Wait, what did I say?
I thought you said Miss Jesse Roche.
No, I said it's.
Oh, it's? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's the problem with having a name like Jesse, right?
Yeah.
too often people mistake it. But, yeah, it's great to be on. I'm really excited because we are a week away from opening day, a week away from the minor league season two. We're seeing a lot of, you know, final roster cuts, some, you know, surprising or, you know, exciting prospects have made opening day rosters. It's just a very exciting time, and of course draft season is winding down, you know, across all fantasy leagues, and you know, we're gearing up for the full-on season.
All right, Mr. Roche, let's go ahead and talk about some of this stuff. So you mentioned some prospects break camp, and I think that's very interesting. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some of the news. There was a Craig Kimbrell, AJ Pollock trade that just happened right before we hit record, so we'll hit on that a little bit too. But one place that I wanted to start, and I think that we talked about it a little bit last week when you were mentioning the inception of this new league, the Highlander Dynasty Invitational, and I think that it's interesting in the context of the new CBA, and maybe we'll start to see some younger guys get called up earlier. But I wanted to give you some runway to talk about this draft so far and the changes of value of some guys where you think, all right, this pick might be good for down the line, and then all of a sudden, oh wow, he's on the opening day roster. So how's that draft been going so far, and like, can you tell us a little bit about the league?
Yeah, so we started the Highlander Dynasty Invitational, which is an industry league pretty close to the regular season. I think the draft started on March 22nd. We had an open application process, so there are people in the league that we chose that are unaffiliated with any, they don't produce content, and they're unaffiliated with any, you know, big website. So there's a lot of diversity in the league. I think it's been a lot of fun so far. We're well past pick 400. Hopefully we'll get this done before opening day. But yeah, it's been a fascinating draft. I think anytime you do a dynasty draft or even a mock draft, it forces you to revisit your valuation process, which has actually been great for me because it's also been in the middle of my ranking process, because we just released our updated Dynasty Top 500. Go check that out. It's up on the Baseball Prospectus website. But yeah, the draft in general, remember, this is a 20-team league, so the values in a 20-team league are different than how I would do my rankings. My rankings are based on like a 16, 15 type team format, that type of depth. In a 20-team league, especially a league like this where it's the normal roster, right? Five starting outfielders, you know, there's one catcher, but then there's, you know, middle infield, corner infield. So it's a normal like setup. The depth becomes a serious issue. And, you know, in a league like that, major league pieces get pushed up and prospects fall because people are scrambling to try and fill out an active roster that can be competitive. Not everybody is having that kind of strategy, but that's an important thing to remember. In deeper formats, prospects often get pushed down, right? Just think about that. And then in shallower formats, like 12-team formats, prospects get pushed up. So, regardless of what format you are, be wary of, you know, what rankings you're looking at and how you're evaluating players, because it does change based on your format. And league size is certainly part of that.
Yeah.
But
well, you mentioned, I really enjoy, like, I'm in the middle of a dynasty draft too that we just, it's a startup, and it's really good to check your own preferences, and it's really good to see what everyone else thinks. Like, I can be, you know, the high person on somebody that we'll talk about later, Joe Adell, and then he goes three rounds before he would have been on my radar. You know that everyone else is sort of catching up to that train as well, train too. So I do think that it's useful if you are able to jump in some of these just to see where your values line up with a lot of other people, either in industry or, you know, just in your social group of somebody that you might be in a league with. So yeah,
certainly. Yeah, and I guess I'll just talk about a couple of before we move on to the more interesting, I guess, pressing mm-hmm. news of the day, the spring training news and everything that's coming out of it, a couple of the more interesting picks, and I think that maybe our listeners would be interested in seeing how it shook out. 20-team 5x5 scoring, the top four went Juan Soto, which was my pick, then Ronald Acuna Jr., Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and Fernando Tatis Jr. So you can see that, you know, Tatis's injuries have docked him, but they certainly keep him within the top five, and I definitely would have had him at three or four. But of course, you know, if you're drafting Tatis that early, it does impact, I think, how you're going to be approaching year one, mm-hmm. because he's obviously going to be out for an extended period of time this year, and it may be best to just kind of plan with Tatis for 2023 and beyond. That would be how I would approach it if I was taking Tatis that early in a league like this, I would. He definitely is a top four player. Another one that's very interesting is Wander Franco went ninth overall to Brett Sayer. And we did move Wander Franco up one spot to 11th in our rankings. You know, I think that this is very much an appropriate place for Wander Franco in Dynasty and in standard 5x5. Probably an OBP as well. In other leagues, you know, like Scoresheet, for example, or which is a simulation-based league, it's arguably Wander Franco is a top three player. I would take him probably over Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in a format like that. So
where the defense plays a role.
Exactly. So, you know, that's just something to watch. I think that there's a very real chance we might see Wander Franco be a top five dynasty asset this time next year. And I think drafting at that spot is very appropriate, in my opinion. Meanwhile, the big prospects, which we'll talk about later, Bobby Witt Jr. went 16th overall, and Julio Rodriguez went 19th. Eric Cross took Bobby Witt Jr. at 16, and Michael Waterloo took J-Rod at 19. You know, that, again, is also appropriate. I think, you know, we pushed Julio Rodriguez up to 16th overall, or 18th overall in our updated dynasty rankings, and Witt's up to 21st. And, you know, we'll talk about this. I don't want to spend too much time on these guys, mm-hmm. but it does appear like they both may be breaking camp with the major league teams. And, you know, I think that they both could have very big seasons this year with their teams. And we may be talking about both of them as potential top 10 dynasty players this time next year. But yeah, those I think are the biggest standout early picks. And I don't want to belabor the point of this draft, but it's been very interesting. Be sure to follow me, follow the Highlander Dynasty Invitational. It has its own Twitter account. It's been putting out updates, draft updates. You know, everyone in the league has been, you know, putting out content about the draft. So be sure to follow everyone in the league. It's a fantastic group of owners, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see how it just continues to develop as the years go by.
I'm definitely interested in reading some of these updates as well, because you know, a lot of times you will hear just bits and pieces of guys that that are liked by some of the people on Twitter, or like just the personal favorites, and now it's actually in a sense where, all right, well, now we're gonna put, for lack of a better phrasing, we're gonna put our money where our mouth is, and we're gonna try and actually compete with our favorites and do so in a league with a lot of other really sharp players too. So it's going to be interesting to monitor, and I'm looking forward to all the content. So check it out on Twitter, follow Jesse, any of the other names that we've dropped, or any other names in the league, you'll probably be able to see that on the league's Twitter account. So check it out. It'll help you gauge where some of your favorites rank in terms of guys in the industry or guys that pay really close attention. All right, so let's get into some news before we talk about the guys breaking camp. I mentioned it previously, there was a pretty big trade, maybe not in a sense of dynasty leagues, but in a sense of 2022 leagues. Craig Kimbrell goes to the Chicago White Sox for AJ Pollock, and it's sort of...
the other way around.
Wait,
Kimbrell to the Sox, Dodgers.
Yeah. So Kimbrell to the White Sox for Nick Madrigal, and then now to the Dodgers for AJ Pollock, who's going to the White Sox. At this stage of the season, my brain is mashed potatoes. So it's one of those where it comes across the wire, and you're like, huh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. It kind of fills the need for both teams. Any thoughts?
It does. Yeah, it fills the need for both teams. The contract costs are very similar for both Kimbrell and Pollock. And it makes a lot of real-life sense. And obviously, it has big ramifications in terms of fantasy, mm-hmm. because all of a sudden, Craig Kimbrell, the long-awaited trade of Craig Kimbrell has occurred. And he goes to the Dodgers, which is about as good of a situation as he could have landed, mm-hmm. right? Because it's, you know, a team that's going to generate lots of wins. And even if he ends up sharing the role with Trinan, you know, that's still going to generate him tons of saves. That said, I don't think this all of a sudden vaults Craig Kimbrell up into like a top three closer in redraft or in dynasty, because he was really bad once he went to the White Sox last year, and he's been terrible again this spring, and his velocity's been down. Obviously, Blake Trinan's there, right, looming behind him, and I think he's going to be prepared to potentially take that role if Kimbrell struggles, because Kimbrell has not been the most stable closer over the years, recently, for sure. So, you know, obviously, it does improve his value. It vaults him up a ton. You know, right now I would move Kimbrell behind Ryan Pressly in terms of my dynasty rankings. I don't think he makes him a top 200 dynasty player, but I think it puts him in that top 250 range. And in redraft, I mean, it makes him a top 100, you know, pick, mm-hmm. for sure. Arguably, you know, like I said, it puts him behind Pressly, in my opinion. He probably means that in many leagues he may be drafted like around 60th overall all of a sudden, which is obviously a big move in value. And obviously it craters Trinan's value, because he's not going to be a closer. He's most certainly going to be potentially filling in for Kimbrell if Kimbrell falters. I don't think he completely sinks his value altogether. I alluded to that, but I think he's still rosterable, mm-hmm. but it definitely, you know, it pales now in comparison to what it was. Another big riser, though, is Gavin Lux, because all of a sudden AJ Pollock's out of town, and there's an opening for playing time, be it at second base or in the outfield. You know, they don't really have another option right now internally, and I think it's Lux's job to lose. I think he's going to be, you know, run out there. You know, they need another left-handed bat in the lineup anyway. So it's obviously a big boon to his value. Potential everyday playing time. At the very least, it's most certainly a strong side platoon situation where he's going to play against every righty. So it is a big boost to his value. Another negative is, I think, Andrew Vaughn and Gavin
Sheets. Let's stay on Lux for a minute. He's a really interesting one for me, because he's just been in the prospect ether for a little while, and has been one of the guys where he's been up with the big club, but not necessarily utilized to the extent that maybe we were hoping when we were stashing him as a prospect. So like you said, he's going to get a chance. He was okay last year against righties. He was bad against lefties. What should we expect from Lux? Because I'm of the mindset, like, I don't really want to write anyone off until they've been at least flirted with in an everyday role. And once they can kind of get settled in, once they get everyday reps, once they can really get their feet under them at the big league level, and then if they still failed, then I'm more likely just to write them off. But this could be Lux's first time to experience that everyday playing time. Do you think that there's another level for him to reach as a big leaguer? Because if so, even if it's incremental, like, that's a huge dynasty bump in value, wouldn't you think?
I mean, yeah, I think that prior to the Dodgers' moves to, you know, kind of block him, right, this offseason, when they brought in Freddie Freeman, all of a sudden Gavin Lux was looking like a bench piece, a utility piece. I think this is, you know, a very clear boost to his value. I think that with, I don't think it's going to be regular playing time. I guess that's my biggest concern. I don't think he's going to play versus lefties. I just don't see it. I mean, I guess it's possible, you know, but he's really had struggles throughout his career versus lefties at the major league level. Yeah. The Dodgers are not opposed to, you know, sitting players versus lefties.
Yeah.
But, you know, again,
he's a career 168, 256, 243 against lefties. So, yeah, I think that would qualify as not great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the bench doesn't necessarily, the projected bench at least, does not necessarily have like a ton of great options that are right-handed. You know, there's Austin Barnes, Hanser Alberto, Edwin Rios, and probably Kevin Pillar, because, you know, they're going to need a right, they're going to need a defensive replacement in the outfield, and they brought him in as a you know, a non-roster invite. I think he's going to make the roster and be the backup outfielder mainly. So there's, I think I could see Hanser Alberto squeezing time from Lux at second base against lefties. But again, you know, I think Lux has a lot of potential. You know, there is, he still has plus speed. There's good power in his bat. You know, he hasn't necessarily hit for much power in the major league level, but, you know, I think it's at least average game power. If and when he actually truly, you know, settles in at the major league level, and he makes plenty of contact and has excellent plate discipline. So, you know, the ingredients are there, at least versus righties, for him to be a potential, you know, above average hitter with average game power, something that, like, against righties could be like a 280 hitter with, you know, over the, obviously he's not going to play all the time, not going to play righties all the time, but he could be like a 280 15 home run bat with some dings against lefties. So maybe reduces the average down to like 270 with like 16 home runs and potentially double digit stolen bases. I mean, that has a lot of value in fantasy. But again, I think, you know, I dropped Lux substantially in the last update for our dynasty rankings, and I stand by that. Even obviously this trade helps his value, but I still think he's going to be in the same projected like strong side platoon as he was before, just with a slightly more, I guess, runway, less competition.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then getting back to the White Sox of it all, you'd mentioned Andrew Vaughn, which it looks like this trade could kind of cement him into a bench role. He'd been hitting really well this spring before kind of getting dinged up himself. But how do you think, does this change his dynasty value? Like, if your rankings had to come out tomorrow, would this slide him down much at all? Or is the bigger person that is going to be affected by this, is it Gavin Sheets?
I mean, I think, you know, we have Andrew Vaughn's also dealing with a hip pointer now. So he may be starting the season banged up anyway. I think it does impact his value. I think he does drop. I don't think he falls outside of the tier I have him in, because in general, going to the season, I was a little bit concerned about his playing time. I think that there's a real chance that Gavin Sheets squeezes more time from Vaughn now. Maybe it's like almost close to a 50-50 split between the two, you know, because the White Sox, that lineup does not have many lefty bats. You know, there's Yoan Moncada and Yasmani Grandal, who are switch hitters. That's it. Those are the only other left-handed bats in that lineup other than potentially Gavin Sheets. So you have to imagine, especially given Vaughn's injury, that Sheets, at the very least at the beginning of the year, is probably going to be a full-time player against righties. And that obviously really hurts Andrew Vaughn's value in the short term. And that short-term hit is a serious issue. I don't think it necessarily is a big red flag for him long-term, because, you know, he is, I think, going to be their first baseman in the future. Jose Abreu is a free agent next year. I have trouble imagining they're going to bring him back. With Vaughn and Sheets, both basically should be first baseman anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, they're masquerading as outfielders and DHs right now. I think that he will get the playing time long term, but this, of course, you know, destroys his short term playing time in many ways.
Yeah, it's interesting because we talked about it a lot when it came to Kyle Tucker and Carter Kieboom to an extent, of sometimes you gotta take what the team is telling you and at face value, and you just have to believe what they're telling you. It seems like they're kind of doing everything that they can just to not run Vaughn out there, and maybe that's partially because it's going to be not a natural position for him, which does make sense. But the way that they've almost been so reticent to have him in the lineup, and then you know the Tony La Russa of it all, like not necessarily trusting some young guys, it starts to make it a little bit unnerving if you're holding on to Vaughn in a dynasty league. Like I still think he's awesome. I think he's a great hitter, but it's reaching a little bit of a point where you're like, hey guys, why are we still blocking Andrew Vaughn? Because this doesn't make a lot of sense. So just something to keep in mind. Like you can certainly buck that trend, because obviously Kyle Tucker is the man now. But for a while they just kept signing outfielders and putting guys in front of him, and it was super frustrating. Anyways, let's stay with the White Sox. There was another story that came out today that it looks like Garrett Crochet has an elbow injury, might be going to get Tommy John surgery. I think that's obviously a bummer, and we hate injuries and they're the worst, and I don't know if there's much else to say, but is there any chance that he can have the surgery, come back and be a rotation option, or do we think that ship has just sailed permanently?
I think there's a chance that happens. Obviously, you know, with Tommy John surgery at this juncture, he's not going to be returning until late 2023. And I assume that if he returns at that point, he probably almost certainly will be used in the bullpen initially. And then maybe going into 2024, they may try to stretch him out to be a rotation piece. But even then, you know, that's going to be almost a year removed from Tommy John surgery, almost 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery at that point. He should be ready to roll. I mean, they've talked about that plan with him. They were talking about the Michael Kopech plan, where he would be in relief again this year and then be transitioned into the rotation, potentially transition into the rotation next year. But, you know, I think this may kind of make him a relief arm long term, because, I mean, for one thing, the White Sox have a fairly stable rotation. You know, I think it's going to be stable long term as well. And I think that for now, Garrett Crochet is a player that you kind of have to drop in all dynasty formats except for like the 30 team leagues that are out there.
Yeah, it's too bad. Like you probably don't need to even think about picking him back up until he picks up a ball again, which isn't going to be for a while. So let's take a quick break, and then we can talk about another injury that is going to make us all fight back some tears potentially. potentially. Quick break to talk about Fantrax. It's the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry. You play in a dynasty league, you play in a keeper league, redraft, best ball leagues, you name it, Fantrax has got it. It has the most in-depth player pool, the easiest customizable options for your league. You can play fantasy football, you can play fantasy basketball, hockey, college basketball, college football, golf, soccer, NASCAR, F1. Fantrax is the place for all of this. I, as a Dynasty enthusiast, the only league that I use for Dynasty is Fantrax. The player pool is just unmatched, and it's very, very easy to customize the league, customize the settings. And I just noticed that on their app, they have a draft function on the app. So instead of taking you to a browser, you can do that on the app now, which is super cool. And if that's not enough to sign up for Fantrax, if you sign up today, you can be entered to win an official Wander Franco jersey. Go to Fantrax.com/BP for baseball prospectus and make an account, and you will be entered to win a jersey. So Fantrax.com/BP and sign up today. Fantrax is the home of fantasy sports. All right, Jesse, I alluded to it, and it's pretty much the tweets that you just don't want to see, and it's Mets scratch Jacob DeGrom, next start in question. It's getting to be old hat, I guess, but that doesn't make it any easier to swallow. I'm having a hard time working through my feelings, obviously. What are we looking at for DeGrom? As we're recording this, we're awaiting an MRI. But scratching starts is never good, and it's an ominous way to start the season.
It is, and it's I hate to say it's amusing. It's not amusing. Yeah. It's unfortunate. You know, he has right shoulder discomfort, tightness. He's getting an MRI on his right shoulder. We're going to wait, you know, all waiting for those results with bated breath. This is something that I think a lot of people probably baked into their valuation of DeGrom this mm-hmm. year. For the most part, I think that only recently, with his impressive showings in spring training and, you know, his assertions of full health, have people started pushing him back up into like the first round in many drafts. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, even though he was temporarily healthy, right, or at least perceived to be, he has a history lately, and he hasn't had any kind of corrective surgery. I just think that he's a ticking time bomb. This may not be the injury that really eats into his playing time this year. He may only it's conceivable he may only miss like his first start. He may not start on opening day. They might push him back a bit further. The Mets are going to handle him with kid gloves, mm-hmm. and I mentioned that when we were talking about pitchers. I do not think that he's going to get a ton of innings this year. I just don't think it's going to happen. Because he's, you know, the face of that franchise right now, and they need him for the playoffs. So they're going to make sure he's healthy, which means that he's not going to throw 180 innings. He may, you know, we'll see what the severity of this injury is. It does not currently sound like it's something that's going to sideline him for a very, very long mm-hmm. time. But again, they've only released so much information, so we'll have to wait and see. But
well, you know, it never sounds like it's going to sideline him for a very long time. Like whenever we get these reports, it's like, oh, Jacob DeGrom, he's flexing his forearm. Who knows? He's probably going to miss his next start, and then he'll throw like four pitches in that start and come out again, and it's like, okay, well, what is going on here with this organization? Hopefully this is not that. And for a purely selfish, I like watching him pitch and perhaps have drafted him a couple times this week. So, you know, not to be even more selfish than my wanting to watch him pitch. So hopefully it's not too much, But it does seem, like you said, there's kind of been a history of this over the last couple seasons. And while it would be awesome to see him go 180 and put up some of the numbers that he did last year and just completely throw the pitching world on its head, it's kind of unrealistic at this point. And if you can get 150 innings out of DeGrom, I think that that's a victory for this season.
Yeah, I think that anyone who owns Jacob DeGrom this year has to have a strong stomach, because there's going to be a lot of these types of things. I think that there's going to be a lot of, oh, Jacob DeGrom's sore here, he has like tightness here, and they're going to take him for MRIs. They're going to be like getting opinions on him all year long, I think, just to be abundantly safe, right? Because they don't want to repeat what happened last year. So just be prepared. I think that we may end up getting, you know, so used to these reports,
yeah,
and so used to him returning from it that we kind of, you know, it's what the boy who cried wolf, right? That ultimately there will be one that actually does be, you know, keep him out for a long, long mm-hmm. period of time. Hopefully it's not this one, but
yeah,
again, you know, just be prepared.
So I've always admired DeGrom from afar, and just got the first DeGrom share in a dynasty league like 3 days ago, and I was feeling really good about myself, and I can say with firsthand experience that the tweets coming in about scratched starts, I can attest that the strong stomach is required, and it is not an enjoyable experience when you're starting to read some of the stuff about that dude. So hoping for the best. Hoping the MRI says, oh, actually, you know what? Pristine. Just perfect.
Yep.
Perfect shoulder, perfect forearm, perfect everything. Perfect smile, like you name it.
We know that one already, right?
So do you want to get into some spring break standouts, or do you want to get into some prospects? Your dealer's choice.
Let's do standouts first, but before that, I want to briefly touch on two rule changes that have occurred that I think matter.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to think about how that'll impact for a dynasty perspective. First, the Major League has announced that they are instituting the Ohtani rule, which would allow a pitcher to play it, hit as DH, and then remain in the game as DH after they've left the game as a pitcher. The big impact of this rule is simply means that Ohtani is not going to gain outfield eligibility at any point this year. So just for those Ohtani owners hoping for outfield eligibility, it's not happening. Not anymore. Sorry. That's all I need to say about that rule. The other one is that Major League Baseball has expanded rosters at the beginning of the season to 28-man rosters. And they've also shortened the IL stint for pitchers to 10 games. This is going to matter for pitching, I think, more than anything. I think it's going to mean that teams are, and they've also made it so that there's no max on how many pitchers a team can pull on their active mm-hmm. roster. This means that it's basically a direct indication that teams are going to pull starting pitchers quickly. You know, this was a short spring, short buildup. I think that you might see pitchers go 3-4 innings early in the year rather than the normal like 5-6. And you might see a lot of bullpen games, right? Just be prepared for that from a fantasy perspective, because, you know, it's going to change, I think, the value of players that can go deeper in games, that are already doing that in the spring. They'll be all of a sudden be more valuable. Like the guys like Chris Flexen, who will go 6 innings, 7 innings, no big deal. But it might not be like a lot of strikeouts, might not be the sexiest innings. But all of a sudden, like, there's not a lot of those players. There may not be that many players like him early this year, and that should improve and increase his value, players like him. So just be prepared for that, because I think that's going to happen. I think we're going to see teams just relying on lots of bullpen usage early in the season, and I think it's going to throw a lot of fantasy leagues in all kinds of flux and chaos, because wins are going to be just random potentially early in the year and hard to predict.
Oh, projecting wins sucks anyways, and now we're just going to be like, all right, now which middle reliever on, like, the Dodgers am I going to try and roster just to vulture some wins? Fun times in store. So let's hit on a few standouts, and most notably, we have Paul DeJong listed, and it looks like he's going to win this job in St. Louis, the shortstop job. And that's notable because we didn't know if that was going to be the case. Edmundo Sosa was also there about to, like, because he played a lot down the stretch last year when DeJong was just frankly terrible. But he's back rounding into form, so I would expect him to get the lion's share of the shortstop reps, especially since St. Louis sat out the shortstop of Palooza this offseason. But some of the other names that we have on the list are ones of former top prospects that are maybe getting acclimated, are maybe turning a corner. I know that there's only so much you can read in the spring stats, but I think that for the three of these guys that we wanted to touch on, this news is good because the alternative would be bad. So let's talk about Joe Adell, who we had as a top two dynasty prospect not even a couple years ago. And he has just been really, really, really disappointing in brief stints with the Angels. He's having a good spring, and it would look as though he's probably in line for an opening day job in Anaheim. What are you looking for upon when the season starts? What would you be looking for with Joe Adell to know that he's maybe turned a corner and is becoming the prospect that we thought he could be?
Well, I think two things in particular. I think contact. If he can make more regular contact, which he started to show last year, and get to his huge power in games, he could explode. I think the big thing we've seen this spring is he's stealing bases. He has three steals this spring. He has huge speed. He just hasn't had the lengthiest track record of actually stealing bases in the minor leagues or the major leagues. So, you know, if that speed is actually playing on the bases now, that's a huge deal. Like, he has that 20 stolen base plus upside if he actually runs.
That can also,
you know, the contact's a big deal.
Yeah, that can also help with the average, right? Like, because I think for a while when he wasn't running, we're like, yeah, he could though, but he's not. If he runs, then that can also take some of the blow away from a low batting average. Like, if he can run and hit for a little power, then if he hits 240, like, I guess you can live with it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, obviously for fantasy purposes, if you're getting those juicy home runs and stolen bases, you can eat a low batting average very easily. You know, there are players like Jazz Chisholm. You know, there's a reason he's a fantasy darling, mm-hmm. you know, because of his power and speed. And I think that is sort of what Joe Adell brings. You know, I think there's arguably more power with Adell and less usable speed. But, you know, he has three home runs and three stolen bases this spring, seven strikeouts in 29 plate appearances, you know, which isn't horrible.
Yeah.
It's very much par for the course. I think he's going to be an everyday player. You know, it's not like, you know, while Brandon Marsh on the surface has had a good spring, he has 13 strikeouts and 28 plate appearances. I'm not so certain that Brandon Marsh is ready. Mm-hmm. And, you know, granted, I do think he'll be on the major league roster. There's Justin Upton there still, too. So it's not like Adell's hold on an everyday job is the most secure. But, you know, if he's hitting for power and speed and managing his contact, he has enormous, enormous fantasy upside, and I think he's definitely had a strong enough spring to warrant a lot of optimism heading into this.
Yeah, season. They still have that fish guy too in the outfield, so that'll lock
that
down
guy.
One spot. I'm really interested in getting your opinion on this next guy because he's been confounding. Every time I kind of dig in, I'm like, I have no idea. Like, this is not the player that I thought he was going to be. This is not the profile that I thought he was going to put up. But Keston Hiura is hitting the absolute shit out of the ball this spring. and he has 26 plate appearances. He's hitting .409, .500, .1045 for his slash. And I mean, obviously he's not going to do this for a full season because that would break all sorts of records. But it is nice to see him starting to hit for some power again. And with 8 strikeouts in 26 plate appearances, sort of like the Joe Adell thing, where that's not like good, but it's also a lot better than what we had seen previously. So we kind of thought that Keston Hiura was an advanced bat coming out of college or coming out of the draft. Is there a way that he can kind of fix his dynasty stock with another good season? It wasn't that long ago when he was like a top, 30 fantasy name in dynasty leagues. How clear do you think his path is at the beginning of this season in Milwaukee?
It is very muddled in Milwaukee. They brought in Andrew McCutchen, who's almost certainly going to be an everyday designated hitter out there, which limits Hiura's path to playing time. He's been playing in spring all over the field. He's seen time at first, second base, and in the outfield. I think he's sort of going to be that like utility bat in a way. He's definitely outperformed Raleigh Tellez this year, but Raleigh Tellez is a left-handed bat who has performed, right? Hiura really hasn't performed as a major leaguer outside that very brief debut. So I think that he is going to be not a full-time player right away, despite his huge spring. That said, he's very much worth a flyer in all formats because, the talent is definitely there if he can make contact. you look at Adell's contact issues and ratchet it up to like 11, and that's what the type of contact issues we've had with Hiura. I mean, in this spring, he does have 8 strikeouts, you alluded to. I believe it's 24 play appearances, which is a 33% strikeout rate in the spring so far. So even though he's really excelled, he's still, struggling with contact at times. The jury's very much still out on Hiura. I think that all of a sudden, though, it does look a little bit better, and it's worthwhile to take a stab at him at this point. And definitely monitor how things go and shake out in Milwaukee in the early going. I don't necessarily think he has a clear path to everyday playing time right out of the gate, but I think there's a chance, especially if there's an injury in the outfield. It's not like that outfield is the bastion of health with Lorenzo Cain and Christian Yelich, and of course Andrew McCutchen at designated hitter. They've not been the healthiest over the years, and they're all aging. So I think there's definitely a way for him to find time, and very much worth a bench stash in every league.
Mm-hmm. And he can fill in a couple different spots. If he's going to be playing all over, like he's played a little first base, second base, like you mentioned, he could fill in. He could platoon with a few guys on that roster, which would probably be helpful to getting him into the lineup a little bit more often. Last name on this list is Mitch Keller. He's throwing the ball extremely hard, which hasn't always been his MO, and he's looking pretty good in Pittsburgh. And I say that cautiously because he has extremely not been that so far for the Pirates. He's another guy that I would be taking a flyer on late because you don't really have to pay up. Although even though some of these spring performances has driven up his ADP a little bit, which is unfortunate for those of us that were looking to get in at the low cost of like free in a lot of leagues, waiver wire in a lot of leagues. So, do you think that he can be anything more than he's been so far? Do you? I think that him fronting a rotation, that those dreams have sailed. But I think he could be a middle rotation guy if some of these velocity gains hold for Keller.
I mean, I think he still has big upside if he can, you know, harness it, right? Because his commands, it's not just like his stuff, right? His command has been a huge issue at the major league level. He has thrown strikes this spring. His velocity in particular, you know, he's averaging 96 miles an hour with his fastball now. All of his stuff has improved, but it still doesn't change the fact that his changeup is incredibly firm. It's like 4 mile an hour differential from his fastball, and it's just a very mediocre pitch. And you know, his breaking balls, I think that this velocity boost will actually really help his slider, which I think now has more bat missing qualities than it had before, and has always been a potentially good pitch for him. And I think that it will help his curve. I mean, I think in general, it's going to help him across the board. I think the issues that we've always had with Keller have been whether that he develop a third pitch that could help him solve his issues against lefties, and whether he would have, you know, whether he'd throw strikes and have the right type of command, be able to command his fastball. I think the extra velocity certainly helps, but it's not like his fastball has the best movement profile despite its velocity. I think it's, you know, it's transformed, you know, 2.5 to 3 mile an hour movement and fastball velocity is a big deal. But I think there's still a lot of concerns I have with him. I think that the curve and changeup are not very good pitches. And I think it's really a fastball slider profile. I mean, that can work. And those other two pitches can be show me pitches, but we'll see. I do like him as a flyer because of his prospect pedigree, his stuff. He's going to have opportunity, right? For context purposes for Dynasty, in the Highlander Dynasty Invitational, he went 351st, which is earlier than I would take him personally.
Hey, look what he's done so far this spring. Let's bump him up a little bit. That's not where I would be looking to pick him up if I'm diving back in, because it's speculation for me. It's okay, this is interesting that he's doing some things differently. I'm going to need to see him throw strikes and not just completely tank my rate stats if I'm going to go in at that level, I think.
Yeah, but you know, there is so much upside if it does click, if it does fully click. I mean, I think that there are shades, and this is going to be dangerous to say, and don't like take my word for this at all. There are shades of like Corbin Burns pre-2020, you know, where Corbin Burns was coming off such a disastrous season and just completely revamped his repertoire heading into the 2020 season and just like exploded. It's not the same. You know, it's not like Mitch Keller has a new pitch. It's not like his curve and change have all of a sudden become good pitches, good third offerings. His stuff is just amped up a bit. Yeah. It's just better. So I don't think it's the same. I think monitoring his command as the season continues is going to be important. But, you know, if he can have decent, solid command of that fastball and slider, I think he can still be very good. I do think it's going to limit what his ceiling is if the curve and changeup continue to be just mediocre offerings.
Sure. Okay, so Mr. Roche says Corbin Burns, move over. Mitch Keller is going to be the new you, which means Cy Young in 2023, I think, for Keller. You heard it here first. Let's talk about a few prospects that it looks like might actually be breaking camp with the big clubs. And we have some premium names on this list, which is frankly just awesome. Like I didn't think that many things would change, and in some organizations, they sure haven't. But let's start with the biggest name on the list, and that's Julio Rodriguez, who has just been tearing the cover off the ball in this spring. And seems like enough to the point where he's going to be in that lineup in Seattle, which is very, very exciting. Do you think that he's going to have an immediate impact this season? Personally, one of the cool things that I like, just before we get into Julio, one of the cool things that I like about promoting these guys is it seems like there's almost always a learning curve. And if you can get that out of the way in the first month of the season, then you might be able to have 5 months of that premium production. as opposed to like the yo-yoing, like going up and down, coming up in May, not being very good, and then you're really kind of running out of time on the season. This could get some of those growing pains out of the way early. How quickly do you think Julio acclimates to big league pitching, and do you think that he can be a top, you know, 25, top 30 bat as early as this year?
I think he'll acclimate really quickly, and I think he'll be awesome. I think the biggest problem with Julio is I do think there's going to be maybe, you know, there will be more strikeouts. Mm-hmm. I think that the average may not be as loud as we'd like to see it. I mean, may end up being like a 250 hitter. I think he'll, I have more hope that he'll be a little bit more than that, but, you know, I think that there's legit power speed there. I think that he's going to be a 20, he could conceivably be a 2020 player mm-hmm. right away. I mean, the speed's taken a big step forward this recently, you know, over the last couple of years. You know, there was a time where not many people thought that he'd even be able to, like, play in center field. Now I think that, you know, there's a legitimate shot for him to be a center fielder early in his career. You know, I think he's probably a plus runner right now, and he wants to steal, and he's shown an aptitude to steal. I think that he may outsteal Jared Kelenic. And it's going to be so fun seeing both of them in the outfield together. They're best buds, and it's going to just, man, it's a great time to be a Mariners fan. They're trying. They're really trying. They're trying to go for it. And I think having Julio Rodriguez break camp is a clear indication of that, mm-hmm. right? And that roster is all of a sudden looking quite competitive, especially in the West. And, you know, yeah, I'm very much in on Julio Rodriguez. I think he should be a player that should be drafted within the top 150 in redraft formats. Mm-hmm. If anyone's drafting right now, I would probably consider him over Jared Kelenic right now. And I think Kelenic is going around 140. And yeah, very much excited about Julio Rodriguez breaking camp. It's not something I expected, to be honest. And that he might be doing that is a huge deal.
It's really cool. He had me before, but my love for Julio Rodriguez was really solidified last year when all of the shenanigans with Mariners front office and ownership and team presidency and talking about holding guys down, and the only response that he had was the Last Dance Jordan meme of, and I took that personally, and it was just fantastic. And so I want to see him hit the ground running, and I think he could. He's already stolen three bases this spring, which you know, you don't read into those statistics too much, but you can notice that he is attempting steals and that they're wanting to see what he can do on the bases, which is really good for fantasy purposes. Another premium name that looks like we will be seeing early in the season and probably just right out of camp is Bobby Witt Jr. They flirted with it last year, even if it wasn't really a thing that was actually on the table. They at least faked it by saying, "Oh yeah, we'll call him up if he's ready." And it would appear as though he is ready now, and the Bobby Witt era in Kansas City, I think, is going to be starting probably on opening day. And I think that he's a guy that could go 2020, which, if it feels underwhelming for a top prospect to go 2020, it happened. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but I think it only happened like five or six times across the league last year. So to be able to come in and do that while still getting acclimated to big league pitching, to facing the best competition, I think that would be a really nice outcome for him, and I think that that's something that's well within reach in his first season. Where are you at with Witt, and how do you stack him up with Rodriguez for this season only?
Yeah, I'm very much in on Bobby Witt Jr. I think that his spring performance has helped solidify it for mm-hmm. me. I've been very impressed with his ability to make contact this spring, yeah, and his ability to adjust to breaking balls. He only has two strikeouts in 26 plate appearances this spring. I mean, he's been fantastic. He's been one of the better hitters in baseball, honestly, in spring training. Again, super small sample and largely meaningless because it is spring training. But all the same, I think it gives me less resistance to the idea that he is a top 100 redraft player right now, that he is pushing top 50 in redraft. I think that, you know, it would not be surprising to me for him to perform similarly to Jazz Chisholm right away.
That's a good shout.
And I think they have similar profiles this year. I think long term I like Witt better, but I think that he could be that. He could be better than that. I think 2020 is definitely in play. Kansas City loves to run, and I think they're going to give him every opportunity to. And I think he's going to hit in the top of the order, right around Whit Merrifield, Salvador Perez, Andrew Benintendi. I mean, there isn't a lot of other great options for a top of that lineup. So I think he's going to be given every opportunity. He should break camp. He's probably going to be playing third base, so he'll gain third base eligibility, which, guess what, is a big deal because third base sucks.
Yeah, it's better this year. Usually when you're like, oh, he's going to get that shortstop eligibility, and this year you're like, yeah, you throw a rock and you hit a good shortstop. So after like the first two or three names, there's not much to feel comfortable about at third base. So that's awesome once he gains that as well.
Yeah, whether that's a long-term thing for him, I'm not sure. Given that they have Nicky Lopez and Adalberto Mondesi, who are both very good shortstop defenders. Lopez is probably going to play second. Mondesi is probably going to play short. Neither of which are Mondesi in particular, obviously, is not a bastion of health by any means. I think there's a chance we could see Witt retain shortstop eligibility. Filling in for Mondesi if he's hurt, similar to, I guess, we saw like Manny Machado do at times in his career. So I'm really in on both Witt and J-Rod. I think that this is a super exciting time. These are like the small implications of the new CBA that teams could recoup a pick for players that finish in the top two of rookie voting. It's not impacted every team, and we'll get to that, but I think that it's indication this is happening. I mean, the Tigers are doing it too, with potentially Spencer Torkelson and Riley Green, who both have had strong springs, breaking camp with that team as well. So when have we had the top four dynasty prospects ever at one time break camp out of spring training? I don't think, at least in my memory, I've never seen that happen, and that may happen this year. It's not set in stone. I don't think none of these guys have necessarily been announced as breaking camp with the teams as of yet. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very possible that this happens, and that's very cool.
Yeah, you mentioned Green and Torkelson. I have long had a prospect crush on Riley Green, and it wasn't really explicable early. I liked him maybe more than the crowd early, and then his 2021 just kind of established him as a capital D dude. I don't know if he's gonna hit for a great average this year. He's one of those guys that really will draw a walk, and that will put him in some bad counts potentially, and I think that will inflate his strikeouts maybe more than they normally would be, and I think that'll definitely be a problem against big league pitchers. So even if he hits 250 or so as a rookie, he's got some power, he's got some speed. And if Detroit is serious about competing and about trying to be better, I think that he'll be pretty good with run production as well. Like, with, you got Javier Baez, Robbie Grossman's always on base, Jamer Candelario is getting better each year, and then you also have Torkelson, you have Akil Baddoo in a platoon role. They've got some guys that could really boost the run production numbers for someone like Green, who portends to be on base if he doesn't strike out a little bit too much. Who do you think would be a better 2022 fantasy guy between Green and Torkelson, and do you have them similar moving forward as well?
I think it's going to be very close. Personally, I think Torkelson is better bet right away. Mm-hmm. I think that he has a better contact profile than Riley Green. I think that, you know, Green had contact issues in AAA mm-hmm. that I don't think many people have talked about, you know, and he, like you said, you know, both of them are actually quite patient hitters. You know, they both work deep counts. I don't think either of them are going to hit for huge averages, but I have a touch more confidence in Torkelson right away. Green's had a bigger spring, and I think both are very fine, you know, targets in redraft. Obviously, in Dynasty, they're fantastic. But yeah, I do prefer Torkelson in general just because I think his power is bigger and I think his hit tool is better than Green. And I'm not 100% sold that Green's going to be a big base runner in the major leagues, you know, get a ton of stolen bases. He had zero stolen base attempts in the spring, for what that's worth. But granted, you know, Akil Badu also had zero too. So, you know, we'll see. I think I'm not as confident in these two, obviously, as I am with like Witt and J-Rod. But, you know, it's very exciting to have them potentially in that Tigers lineup that all of a sudden, you know, with them added to it, with Javier Baez brought in, hopefully Akil Badu takes another step forward. All of a sudden that lineup is somewhat formidable, you know, in a very much a competitive AL Central. So I think that they're going to be given that shot, and I think they could run with it.
Yeah, I think here's the fun thing. Looks like Green just limped out of the game with a trainer in today's game. So maybe we'll pour some cold water on his early season prospects. Plead to turn injuries off. I think that we should be able to do that just like in a video game because they suck. So before we get out of here, I think there are some other prospects that could be breaking camp with their teams. Let's try and plow through some of these quickly. It seems as like Hunter Green is in that Reds rotation to start the season, and I think that they've announced that, and that the fifth starter could be Nick Lodolo when they do need one, which isn't for a few weeks into the season. We spent some time talking about Green especially last week, and so if you wanted to check out our opinions or thoughts, that you could queue up last week's episode, or just read some of the stuff that we have on those guys at BP. Jeremy Pena, the Astros didn't bring back Carlos Correa, and I think a big reason why is their belief in Jeremy Pena. He seems to be the guy there to start the season. Do you think that he's going to be, or what kind of fantasy line do you think that we could see from Pena this season?
You know, I'm not as enthralled with him as a hitter, as an offensive force. Uh-huh. I know that people with MVP are quite high on Pena. Mm-hmm. I think that, and both obviously he's a fantastic defender, but they're also higher on his bat than I am. I think he could be like a 250, 10 to 15 home run bat with, you know, 5 to 10 stolen bases. So nothing crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing crazy this year. Not great this year, better in a simulation factor in the defense.
Yeah, I think long-term he could be something like a 260, 270 hitter approaching 20 home runs with double-digit stolen bases. So again, even long-term, I don't think his upside's like sky high. This is for fantasy purposes. He's more of like a high-floor solid player mm-hmm. than anything. And I just don't – I'm not – super excited about him. It's similar to another player which is on this list, is Bryson Stott mm-hmm. for the Phillies, who potentially is going to break camp as their starting third baseman. He's in a competition with Alec Baum. Obviously, Baum has been, well, he's bombed
yes.
lately in the major league level, and he's a terrible defensive third baseman. So
what's he really done wrong?
Right, yeah. I mean, he hits the ball hard into the ground. That's what it does. You know, Stott could maybe breaking camp with the Phillies. I think it would make a lot of sense for that team that needs defense in the infield. And again, you know, I think what I said with Pena holds equally well with Stott. I don't think either of them have like massive upside. I think Stott has a touch more offensive upside than Pena, but obviously Pena is just an elite defensive shortstop. So in real life, Pena is very much a better prospect. And a couple other players that I'll just briefly touch on. Matt Brash is potentially going to be breaking camp as the fifth starter for the Mariners. That's a big deal, I think, in a lot of ways. It's maybe not as important as a lot of these other ones, but he could be a big strikeout arm. He struck out. He misses lots and lots of bats. He has substantial command issues, though, and I think that there's a chance it could just be a very volatile profile. Mm-hmm. He's not a player I'm super keen on in redraft. You know, he really is basically a two-pitch pitcher. He does throw a changeup, which isn't terrible, but it's very infrequent. He's basically four-seam fastball, which it's almost a borderline sinker. It has like that kind of a bizarre movement. And then he throws a really good slider, like, you know, a mid-80s slider with two-plane movement. That's probably, you know, a plus or better pitch. He has huge velocity, you know, he sits like 96, 97 miles an hour. I'm not enthralled with his fastball movement, as you can tell, but I love his slider. Yeah. It's a fantastic pitch. I think he's going to miss lots of bats. He just might walk everybody. but he's just a fun guy. He's a great guy as a flyer in redrafts late. There's Steve Kwan. It sounds like he's going to potentially break camp with the Guardians.
If he doesn't, I think that would be weirder because their outfield situation is rough for like the third year in a row.
Yes. He's an elite contact hitter. You know, in the minor leagues last year, he had contact rates about 92%, which is freaking crazy. He has contact ability in the same vein as like David Fletcher, as Nick Madrigal. Not quite Nick Madrigal, but he's up in that range of elite contact. How much his power and speed plays is an open question. He's not a big guy. He doesn't have a ton of raw power. His exit velocities and bad ball data are not great. But even so, if he can be he could be a 300 hitter right away. Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal. You know, he could be a souped up like Luis Arraez, for example. A better version of that with more pop, more speed. He should be considered that at least. I think there's a chance he could be better. And that's, I think, something that should drive a lot of people trying to seek him out. I know he's gotten a lot of hype in certain circles. Again, I think we're going to see very poor exit velocities very right away, but the contact ability is so real that he's going to thrive, that he'll have a place. The final one on this list of people that are going to be breaking camp are Seth Beer. Seth Beer is just a fun power bat that's going to be DHing for the the Diamondbacks. I think he'll hit.
Yep.
I think he'll hit. I don't think it's going to be the fanciest.
It was wise of him to send that fruit basket to the commissioner's office to make sure to just double down and make sure that there's going to be an NLDH because he might be the biggest beneficiary of that rule change. And Kyle Schwarber, which got a bunch of new jobs potentially, and
Daniel Vogelbach. I think he'll thrive. I think he won't be a guy who's gonna hit for maybe the biggest power. I don't think he's gonna be a batting average sinkhole either. I think he could be a 250, 25 home run bat over a full season's playing time at peak. I don't think that's going to happen this year, but I mean, I think that's valuable, and I think he'll hit righties. So it'll be interesting to see how he ends up getting used, if he's going to be a full time guy or in a strong side platoon. But those are the guys that are likely to break camp. There's a couple that are not. We can touch on briefly. We're late into this episode. We don't want to go too much longer, but. O'Neill Cruz has obviously he's been demoted to AAA. I think it's interesting. This year, the major league season is 182 games long. It's usually 187. And you need 172 games to accrue a year of service time. Last year, he had 2 games. So that means he's going to probably stay in the minors for 12 days.
No, at least. Actually, you know what? I was told that he's going to be working on his outfield defense because they might try him in the outfield. And so I think that also takes 12 days from what I've gathered in my notes.
Yep, 12 days. So I think he'll be up. I think it might not be until late April, though. So just be patient. he has crazy upside if it clicks. I mean, not many players in Major League Baseball, period, have his type of raw power and raw power potential. So just be ready. He's going to be really fun player once he does arrive, and I think he will. And I think it will happen, you know, again, by late April. And Juan Yepes, I guess, is another guy who's kind of disappointing not player not to break camp. The signing of Albert Pujols basically relegated him back to AAA. That's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. It would have been nice to have seen him being given an opportunity. But again, that's a bummer. The other player that we don't know yet, that hasn't been that we haven't mentioned either of these, is CJ Abrams. And some of the things that's related to that is that the Padres cut loose a player who was on their 40-man roster. So now they have an open spot in their 40-man roster, which has led people to believe maybe Abrams will break camp with the Padres. I'm not as convinced of that. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a real chance that there may be a trade. They've been rumored with linked to Brian Reynolds. That would be a good fit for them. I think that could be a trade that happens. I think the Padres have some pieces that could move that don't really have clear paths for them on their present roster. Obviously, it would probably take someone like a Robert Hassel involved in that trade to actually move a needle for the Pirates, because Brian Reynolds is cost controlled mm-hmm. through 2025.
He's really good.
So he's really good. But yeah, it'll be interesting because, you know, the Padres have that fifth starter role, which looks like it's going to go to Nick Martinez. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Chris Paddock is without a starting job. Mackenzie Gore has looked very good this spring. You know, maybe Gore gets moved. I think there's going to be something happening in San Diego. Just be on the lookout. Well, something big is going to happen the next day or
that
two.
That could be hopefully that we'll have some fun stuff like that to talk about next week, when we'll also yes. have like a day of games to talk about. Then we can speculate wildly about one day's worth of a sample size. So I am looking forward to that. It's always my favorite time of year. Reckless speculation after a weekend of baseball. One last name to shout out, Jesus Luzardo has looked awesome this spring, so keep him in mind as some guy that we maybe had fallen off of a little bit after his injury-riddled first handful of seasons and a poor debut in Miami. So shout out Jesus Luzardo. Otherwise, I think that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next week. And like I said, let the reckless speculation of dynasty values begin, because we're going to have real games in a very, very short amount of time. So, Jesse, thanks again. This is always super fun to talk to you about this stuff. And I'm excited to, you know, to dig in a little bit more. But
yeah,
until then... that's it for this week. You guys are the coolest. Catch us next week. Read all the stuff at Baseball Prospectus, and we are out.